Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Bell and Sperling on Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to Bell and Sperling.
With him, Mike Bell.
And him, Johnny Sperling. And I just want to say one word. Creaky.
I don't like cricket.
No.
I love it.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to be talking about the cricket. The greatest finish to a sporting event that I have ever seen in my life.
Oh, it's incredible.
I jumped up, twisted me ankle.
Did you really?
Twisted me ankle, fell over, done a cartwheel, done a triple axle double toe loop and backflip and landed on the sofa. It's one of the best ever. We're going to be talking about cricket, obviously, and Wimbledon and the Grand Prix. I've never, ever known a Sunday like it.
No, absolutely. We're going to be talking to our guest, Rob Johnson, England cricket correspondent for the Kick Buzz.
He was actually at the game as well.
He was at the game.
It was just going to be fantastic.
Come on, Rob.
We're going to be talking to our very own Kieran, who's going to come in and give us all the little bits and pieces that we didn't know about cricket.
He's lost his voice.
He's lost his voice. Yeah. A bit of a review.
And our old friend of the show, George Belshaw, is going to come on, tennis reporter for the Metro.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about what a final that was.
It was. We're going to talk about Halep as well, because it suddenly gets forgotten that she beat Serena Williams.
No, she was incredible.
So we've got to talk about that. But obviously,
what a performance.
Roger and Novak and all the celebrities that were in the audience.
That was incredible, though, wasn't it? I mean,
amazing. Amazing. And we're also going to be talking to George Karasaris, sports psychologist, because we just want to get into the mindset of how some of these people got over the line. If you think about it, Roger had 2 match points and he had all the crowd behind him, but Novak still won the game. How do we get our mindset to win these big tournaments? It's all coming up with the Bell and Sperling Show. We are here until 1 o'clock today.
1 o'clock today. Oh, we got our old show back.
Got the old
10 to 1.
There you go. We might even play a bit of 10 to 1 jingle later on.
Yeah, we have got that.
We've got that.
Yeah, we did 11 to 1:30. Mm. We've got a 10 to 1.
In a couple of days' time, we're going to do 3 days on the trot through the night. we may even camp out and they say, Wimbledon's finished, mate. Just talk to us, John.
Yes,
because
I'll talk.
We said only a few months ago on the Bell and Sperling Show that Tiger Woods was the greatest comeback of a career that we'd ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
I think watching that cricket, okay, even if you're not
the same, not the same though, is it?
It's not the same. No, I'm just...
Came back in the game.
But what a year of sport that we've ended up talking about this year. You know, the fact of the comeback from Spurs, the comeback from Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Yeah. It's just... It's unbelievable. The end to the Premiership with Manchester City and Liverpool fighting it out to the last day.
Yeah.
It's been an unbelievable year.
It has been a very, very good year.
And, you know, we've got the netball finals at the moment.
I tell you, I'm beside myself about that. The netball finals, I haven't slept.
Have you not?
No.
Are you wing attack or goal defence?
I'm goal defence.
Yeah.
Can men play netball?
Yeah, not very well. Women are very good at it, though.
What's the difference between netball and basketball? There isn't much, is there?
You silly.
What?
What do you mean, what's the difference? Basketball, obviously, we're bouncing it. Do you know what? I'm not even going to talk to you. You just can't even throw that one at me.
Wow.
The fact is, with netball, they wear skirts. And that's it. The basketball players don't wear skirts.
No, they don't.
Right? So that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
You don't really get involved in basketball and netball, do you?
No, not really.
Not really. I just heard that. look, probably the greatest Sunday of sport ever. And there weren't even a football match involved.
No, when you think about it. Well, we said, didn't we, when the football season finished?
Yeah.
Oh,
what are we going to do?
What are we going to do? You know, and it's turned out we've had more to do than ever.
Yeah. It is. It's just, you know, luckily the snooker wasn't on. Do you know what I mean? If that they'd thrown that in the mix,
oh god, yeah,
Ronnie's on the in the final or something, we wouldn't know what we were going to do.
No, absolutely.
I was just moving my headphones. the mad thing about the cricket was that there's a couple of things that have happened at the end that nobody knew. The average person who watches cricket,
yeah,
okay, you wouldn't have known.
No,
nobody's heard of a supernova.
Well, unless Oasis was singing
unless
about
Oasis
it.
Say. But nobody had heard that. So
no.
Even,
a super over.
Even the commentators were sort of... you could sort of feel them off air going,
yeah, yeah.
What happens next?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, nobody knew. You know, do we play like, you know, Ching Chang Walla? Do we play Paper, Scissors, Stone as to who's
won? Ching Chang Walla?
It's the same as Paper, Scissors, Stone.
Ching Chang Walla?
Well, I don't know. That's what we always used to play. You know, that's what we called it. Paper, Scissors, Stone. In fact, I've got a very good, very... Just before we do that, I've got a really good story, and everybody can use this.
Yes.
Okay? If you want to play Paper, Scissors, Stone, and there's three or four of you...
Yeah.
Right? You figure it out,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You all have a word with each other if you want somebody to lose.
Right.
Right? Now, we did this to our mate, Jolsey. Jolsey listens to the show. But we was away on a ski trip.
Yeah.
And there was five of us.
Yeah.
And we would all go... Whatever you say first is what you all go.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we say, right, we're going to play Paper, Scissors, Stone, uh-huh. All of us lot are going to go paper.
Oh, I see. Right.
Right.
You pre-planned okay? it.
And I hope the fact that he doesn't go paper as well.
Right.
So if we go stone, scissors, paper, means we're all going to go stone.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a good way of. He could not figure it out for a week. He lost every single one. It'd be like this. He'd go right. Who's going to go and get the hot chocolates today? And you go, should we play Paper, Scissors, Stone? We'd all go paper. He'd go stone. He'd go, I can't believe it.
Poor old Joe, I can see his face now.
No, he's not. It was only when there was 16 of us on a stag do that I said, right, we're all going to do it now. And we went stone, scissors, paper. We all went, 15 people went stone.
He figured it out.
He had a pair of scissors.
Did he figure it out?
He just went, I'll never forget his words. He went, that's outrageous. So he lost. So anyway, so getting back to the cricket. It's a great one, isn't it? Okay, so at the end of it, so it's all a draw. And then we go, right, we're going to play Paper, Scissors, Stone to see who won it. Can you imagine? It's a great game, isn't it? But some of these sort of things that happen at the end. So when Stokes is sliding in.
Yes.
So is it two runs?
Yeah, yeah.
And he slid in and the ball was hit his bat and gone out for a boundary.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in my book, okay, I was playing golf the other day and my mate's ball was on the green already.
Yeah, yep.
I've chipped onto the green, and my ball has hit his ball and knocked it about 3 foot away. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think that's not a penalty, but he can move his ball back. If I'm honest, I didn't really know what the rules were.
No.
And I would have said that if that ball's thrown in and it hits Stokes' bat and it goes out, I would have think that you're sort of obstructing the wicket.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have thought he would have got penalised for it.
Right.
No.
No.
We got four runs.
Four runs.
Well, we end up with six, but...
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. And so we've, you know, look, if that doesn't happen...
I mean, it wasn't looking good at one point, was it?
It was looking bad.
Of course, it was looking bad.
You know, the fact is, we all said that after they've had their innings, we was like, yeah, we're happy with that.
Yeah.
We're happy with that. We can chase that. And, you know, sort of halfway through, it was still the percentages were that England were going to win.
Mm.
And I kept thinking, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This ain't looking good for us.
No.
But Ben Stokes, what he did there, it's funny. You're sort of looking out of the pitch and you're thinking, this fella looks confident. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to...
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's going to have it. And the unbelievable thing is that we get to it and we draw the match. I mean, it's just... There's so many elements to that match.
Yeah, yeah.
That are incredible. You know, and I've just... By the way, was you flicking between that and the tennis?
I was. I must admit, I was. Yeah. Yeah. Because the tennis was so good.
Yeah.
And obviously the cricket was so good too.
Yeah.
But the tennis was just...
Did you wanted Roger?
I wanted Roger. But you know what? At the end of the day, Djokovic is what a player he is. I knew he was. I mean, mind you, you say you knew he was going to win. It was level beggings right up to the end.
He was two match points down.
Yeah.
You know, and when Roger had
two championship points,
but it was two aces. That was the coup. When he hit 30 and 40, he's hit them as aces.
Two aces, yeah.
You just thought,
he's going to ace him out. He's going to ace him out.
And then I thought, because it was at a crucial point with the cricket as well. So I think I said to you, I said, in the conservatory, we've got one screen.
Yeah.
And in the living room, we've got
the conservatory.
Got the conservatory, yeah. And my son, it kept, I want to watch the
tennis. You've got a utility room.
I wanted to watch the tennis, right, on one screen of it. He kept going and putting his PlayStation on, right?
You got decking.
Decking, yeah. No, patio.
Oh, patio.
Yeah, there's no telly out there, though.
No.
No, it should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a roof as well.
Oh, nice.
It's incredible.
Garage.
I haven't got what you've got.
What have I got?
I haven't got a recording studio in the garden. Right? Not everybody has one of those.
It's only a small one.
Yeah, well, that's what they say. But I was flicking between the two, and then, of course, he kept going on his PlayStation, so I couldn't quite watch it. Right? But it was a crucial time when Roger was two match points up, and it was a crucial time in the cricket.
Yes.
So you didn't want to go back and go, what happened?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to tape it, do you?
Well, No, you can't tape it.
You can't tape it.
Well, I actually went back and watched it on the iPlayer. No. Oh. And, so I watched the cricket.
Yeah.
Cricket. And then I went back and watched the final. So I didn't know the score.
Are you joking?
Yeah.
Oh, you had it? Oh, right. Okay.
Because the BBC iPlayer, you can.
Yeah.
You watch it live, but you can pause it, you see.
Ah. So you pay your license, do you?
Pardon?
You pay for your BBC TV license.
Of course.
Yeah.
Not paying it this year, though.
No, that's it.
Refusing, my mum.
Well, they're charging your mum, aren't they?
Yeah.
She's 86, no, isn't it? And they're charging her.
I've tore it up.
You know?
I've tore it up.
Will you do what Ben Fogle did and give your salary back?
Pardon?
Ben Fogle gave his salary back to the BBC.
Ben Fogle can afford to give his salary back. I'll give him my salary back. I'll be on the streets.
You can't give luncheon vouchers back, can you? Do you remember luncheon vouchers?
I do. Don't get them anymore.
I used to have them when I worked in the city. That's how they used to bump up your pay, give you £1.50 a day luncheon vouchers. I'd go to McDonald's. There are other burger places. But I'd go to McDonald's. But the girl who worked at McDonald's at Monument, she quite liked me, so she used to give me an extra apple pie.
Nice. You love apple pies?
Yeah. 2 for 99p now. And also, obviously...
Lewis Hamilton.
I mean, we don't ever really... Okay. We were talking about F1 in the week. The fact it was Silverstone, and Silverstone have managed to keep it there for another few years, which is great.
Yeah.
But we have got to a point in the recent months where we've sort of saying we know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it got a bit boring, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But how can we get boring when it's our fella who keeps winning?
Well, this is what I said the other day. It'd be more boring if someone not English was winning it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, we had to endure Michael Schumacher for years winning everything, you know.
Unbelievable. I mean, Lewis is unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah, it's incredible.
He's another one.
The only thing I would say is I was having a little chat with some of the boys on the chat last night, on your WhatsApp chat.
On the WhatsApp chat.
I mean, we've all got 75 WhatsApp chats, haven't we?
Yeah.
Right? And I was having a chat, and we said, Formula One has got a little bit clinical.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is what we've been saying.
We want to see a few fracas, don't we?
Yeah. Right? I want to see a few scrapes.
Don't want to see anyone get hurt.
No.
I want to see a couple of engines blow up like they used to. You know, like where the oil would come out the back. And
yeah.
Now he's got to avoid the oil behind him. You know?
Do you know what I miss on cars?
Go on.
Rust.
Rust.
I miss rust.
Love sport.
Listen, we're going to talk to Rob Johnston, who was reporting from the match. That must be the hardest thing to do. Sit and report. And watch it as a punter as well.
Yeah, as a fan.
Rob Johnston joins us now, England cricket correspondent for Crick Buzz. How are you, Rob?
Hi, guys. Still on a high after yesterday, and you're right. It was a bit of a nightmare game to report on, to be honest, because you didn't know what was going to happen. But, just brilliant occasion to be there.
I mean, how do you do that? How do you report for that? Because you can't really, you've got to keep your head up. You can't sort of look down and keep, start writing, can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
And doing your copy. It's got to be, you've got to stay on it, haven't you?
Yeah, you have. It's particularly yesterday, because every single ball towards the end seemed to, you know, something remarkable would happen. You just didn't want to miss it. So you end up sort of sitting there with three different documents open with different versions of what might happen, you know, a New Zealand win, an England win. So, yeah, I mean, it was just a remarkable finish. And as I said, you know, just some things happened in that game which were just unfathomable. You know, it's you'd probably never see a game like it again. And that's why people are calling it the greatest ever one-day international. And I think they're probably right.
I think that's easy. That's a gimme, isn't it? It's the greatest one-day. But I'm actually thinking it could be one of the greatest ending to any sporting event, especially a World Cup, that I've ever seen.
And it shows how exciting cricket can be. I mean, Rob, do you think this is the best advert, isn't it, for the game of cricket, not just in this country, but around the world?
I think it is. You know, obviously it was on free-to-air TV here in the UK. It was on free-to-air TV in New Zealand as well. And New Zealand, usually their games are behind a paywall. So it was a fantastic advert. And actually, I think they would have, you know, the England team maybe would have wanted to win more comfortably, but for the longer term prospects of the game, having that finish on a Sunday night, you know, where people will be at home watching it on TV, I just think, you know, to have that drama was just fantastic. And, you know, I'm at the Oval now. England are going to turn up later, the players. There's already a lot of school kids in here, and there was, you know, a lot of people outside the gates waiting to get in to see the team and welcome them. So, look, I really do hope it rekindles the love of the game that the English public have with cricket, because, as you said, you know, it can be an absolutely brilliant game when we get it right. We give it exposure and we back it, because, you know, for me, it doesn't need gimmicks or changing. It's a wonderful game. We've just got to get it out to people and get them watching it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, strangely enough, we've been sort of saying about the last few months, we've sort of, you know, doing this show, we've sort of referenced the IPL, and it's made it a bit more exciting, hasn't it? They wear some mad flashy colours. I love it, the fact that the bowls light up now when the ball hits the stumps. And I know that, you know, you're playing more music in the stand. They're not Americanising it. But it is becoming, trying to make it more exciting, isn't it?
It is, and you know, it was amazing actually yesterday to be at Lord's with music, you know, sort of the tradition of that ground, very traditional ground, you know, the big members pavilion with all the members sitting there, but you know, music blaring out between the overs. And look, you know, I don't think cricket can afford to be stuffy about this stuff. You know, ultimately, cricket has to attract people to watch it. People aren't just going to watch it when they've got a million other things that they can do with their leisure time, and when leisure time is getting squeezed. So they have, you know, cricket authorities have got to think of any way to try and attract, you know, kids, but not just kids, adults into the game. And those sort of things do make it more entertaining. They do liven it up. They might not be for everybody, but, you know, I think the proof is in the pudding with things such as the IPL, that does attract attention, it does attract advertisers, it is glitzy, it's glamorous. So yeah, I don't have a problem with it. And obviously we've still got Test cricket, which is the traditional format, so people who like the traditional game have that as well. So,
it's funny, yeah, it's funny, I mean, in between overs, in between, you know, when the music comes on and the fella starts going, have you got your tickets there? Have you got your tickets? It's almost like a funfair, isn't it?
But that's what I think. I mean, listen, we're having Dave Holmes come on the show a little bit later on, who played guitar at the final yesterday. He's the rock guitarist. In fact, he's played gigs with us. He's played for many, many big names. But even to have that there, he plays the guitar. It's a cricket bat. It's a cricket bat guitar. But just the whole feel of that just adds something different to it, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, there were yesterday late on when they were playing Hi Ho Silver Lining, and the crowd, you know, were joining in. It was just a fantastic atmosphere, and you know, I think you're right, those sort of things do just add a little bit extra. If everyone's just sitting there, it still would have been a brilliant spectacle. But you know, personally, I think they do add to the game. And as I said, you know, we've got to be doing everything to attract people to the game, particularly when, you know, participation levels are falling in the game. And there was a, you know, when people like Josh Butler and Ben Stokes, you know, they're not actually household names in this country, which you know, in India, they couldn't walk down the street in Mumbai without getting mobbed. But they probably could really? Do that in a lot of cities here in the UK. And that really is sort of a stark anecdote that you've got to think, well, hold on a minute, we've really got to get these people out there. Because as you saw yesterday, you know, Stokes and Butler are two of the best players in the world. And you know, we should be showing these guys off.
Yeah, I was going to say, just in saying that, obviously, we're going to be talking about Stokes for weeks. And it's rightly so, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. But just as important for me was on the last run was the fact that Roy fielded so well. He got to the ball in time. But now that throw can go anywhere. He could go three foot wide either side. And then Butler's caught it and, you know, quick enough to get hit the stumps. So both those two are as important as Stokes, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was two balls before that in the over. The ball had gone out. It was a left-hander. Roy was on the other side of the pitch, but he fumbled it.
He did, yeah.
When they were coming back for two. Missed a potential chance for a run-out, although they probably would have made that. So then to have the clarity of thought and purpose to go over the other side, more or less exactly the same situation, but to pick the ball up. The throw was almost put like on the bounce, so it sat up nicely for Butler, and Butler got it back quickly. You know, that was a superb bit of fielding. But actually, New Zealand did something very similar in the last over of England's proper innings when they ran out Adil Rashid and Mark Wood. Two very similar instances to the Roy one. The fielding yesterday, actually, from both sides was fantastic. They are the best two fielding sides in the world, and probably no coincidence why they were at the final yesterday.
Mm. I mean, just talking about the New Zealand team, do you think Kane Williamson made the right decision to bat first?
Yeah, it was a difficult one, and I think it was one of those tosses where actually you hope you probably lose it, so you put the onus on the other guy to make the decision. I think actually it was probably the right decision, because Williamson said after the game that he was banking on the pitch getting drier and slowing down, and I think it did do that. You know, Stokes was in for a long time, and even at the end was struggling to time the ball, so I think it was the right decision, but there were, you know, a number of just moments where it just didn't fall for New Zealand. So I don't think that decision was the reason they didn't win. They probably would have liked to have batted a bit better to get another 20, and that's what Williams said. They wanted sort of 250, 260. But no, I think that probably was the right decision. And, you know, on another day, it would have worked out for them.
Yeah, just very, very quickly, I mean, it's ended up on the Sunday, where it's probably the biggest sporting day ever. You know, you've got the men's final between the two of the greatest tennis players have ever picked up a racket, and it goes to five sets. You've got the Formula One Grand Prix with our own man who wins every week. I mean, it's such a tough day for people to flick between all three of them. I mean, you know, we're just lucky that it wasn't the netball world final. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known what to do, would we? Do you know what I mean? That it ended up on that day is the same day as everything else, Rob.
Yeah, and it was like the perfect storm, wasn't it, where everything was sort of coming to a conclusion at roughly the same time. And actually, I think the cricket going on a little bit longer than Wimbledon in the end helped, because people might have been able to flick over to that. So, yeah, look, it was just a brilliant day. And I think another example, actually, of England winning a World Cup the hard way. They did it in 66, the football with extra time, the rugby, obviously, with a last-minute drop goal from Johnny Wilkinson. And yesterday in a Super Over, I don't think we like to do anything, you know, easy. But
nobody people have heard of the Super Over before, have they?
In fact, later on, we're going to play a little bit
of Champagne Super Over.
Listen, Rob, listen, go and rest your voice. I'm sure you've been screaming and shouting. Yeah. And enjoy it down at the Oval today. It's something unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
That we can all sort of remember. Rob Johnson there, England cricket correspondent for Crick Buzz.
I bet he's hardly any sleep.
Well, that's the coup, isn't it? It's like, you know, stuff like this is when you sort of... it's just a strange feeling. The fact... listen, we could have come in here today and we'd have gone, oh... We're the nearly people.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, no, I always said that, didn't I?
You know.
Yesterday, we were the bride.
Yeah, exactly.
The bride.
Let's look at
not the bridesmaid.
The football last year, semi-final against Croatia.
Yeah, Women's World Cup.
Semi-final. Yesterday, England, World Cup holders.
Love sports.
Love 40. we're going to switch a little bit from cricket.
So, listen.
Yeah.
So, it now goes to... You can go to like 11, yes. 11 in the fifth
12,
set.
12 all in the 12, fifth.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? I can't get used to it.
No.
It's really weird.
It's really weird. And I put it on the a couple of our mates who were away last night. They was in China.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, what happened? Because they could some of the stuff they couldn't get.
No.
And I said, what happened in the tennis? And I said, you know, it went at 12 all.
Yeah.
And then went to a tie break. And it was like, 12. What do you mean a tie break in the fifth set? You don't have a tie break in the fifth
set.
But they've changed it. Everyone,
yeah.
So there's a lot of rule changes in sport lately.
It was quicker before, wasn't it?
It was what?
It was quicker.
Or no, what do you mean? It would just carry on going, wouldn't it?
They just carry on going? Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get confused.
Yeah, I know you do. They just carried on going. There was no tie break in the fifth set.
Ah.
Right? And they've curbed it. Otherwise, they'd still be playing
they
now.
They would still be playing, wouldn't they? Yeah.
You know, especially those two. Most of the crowd would have gone home. Right. Just turn the lights off. It's all right. Just turn the lights off.
Yeah.
Right. Last.
Just Rog.
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 I'm going. I'll be back in the morning. Okay. Yeah. Don't worry. All right.
Yeah. No, Vec. You'll be all right.
You'll be all right. Do you want a drink? I'll get you a drink. I'll be back in the morning. Fry up.
Tell me one in the morning.
Let me know. In fact, WhatsApp us. Tell us who won out the pair of you. there you go. Must just give a big shout out to our listener who's just, someone sent the message, he's listening, Mr. Martin Beckett. We haven't seen him for quite some time.
Martin Beckett.
He's been travelling.
He's been away travelling.
And he's just come back and he's listening to the show today.
I've got one thing to say to Martin Beckett. Time.
It's a personal joke. There you go. Listen, we are now joined by George Belshaw, tennis reporter for the Metro. Good morning, George.
Hi, guys.
Hello, yes. George. What a day! Eh? What a day for the cricket and the tennis was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was far too much going on. Really,
there was.
I can't really complain with my lot sitting in the stadium watching that match yesterday. It was pretty. Pretty memorable.
It's the longest final, isn't it, George?
Yeah.
It's the longest final.
Ever final, which, you know,
wow.
As you mentioned before, considering other finals have gone to like 16, 14 in the fifth, for it still to be as long, even with that tiebreak, was pretty crazy. But, you know, very, very good match. I think Roger probably deserved to win, to be honest. I thought he played the better match.
He won more points, didn't he, Roger?
He did, yeah.
Just on that, I mean, you know, my son was watching it, sort of flicking between that and the cricket and the earlier on between the Grand Prix and stuff. And my son, I was rooting for Roger. I don't know why we root for Roger.
I don't know why.
He's a beautiful man, isn't he? He's a beautiful man. And so we root for Roger. And we got to a point, I did get to a point, because my son picked it up. He said, Dad, I feel really sorry for Djokovic because all the crowd cheer every single point that Roger wins. And I do feel sorry for him. Mm. And that took some character to win that match with everybody against you, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's completely right. I think when we're going to look back at this era of greats, the amount of times Novak has had to beat Roger and Rafa when the crowd's been completely against him.
And Murray, I suppose, as well.
And Murray as well, you know.
Mind you, we probably like Novak more than we do Murray. No, that's not entirely true. I bet even Murray's mum was cheering Novak at one point. No, do you know, it shows character, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, it's like playing away in football every week, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely, yeah, yeah.
You play your biggest rivals, but you never get to play them at home. And I think that's serious character, the fact he's probably going to end up winning more Grand Slams than all of them, really.
Wow. Do you think so?
I think so. I mean, he's within four of Federer now. He's got 5 years on him. He's won four of the last five Slams.
Yeah.
Rafa and Roger are both slowing in terms of the majors they're winning. You know, Nadal will probably win a couple more Frenches. I don't think Roger will win another one now. I think that was his real chance yesterday.
It was, wasn't it? I don't think he's going to...
Really? You don't think he'll win another one?
I don't think he will.
Really?
I agree with you. I don't think he will.
What about... Just talk to us. He had two match points. And, I mean, the way he got to two match points was two aces.
Yeah.
And you just thought, he's just turned the screw. He's in the groove.
I remember saying, that's it. Go on, ace him out now. Go on, another ace.
Yeah. And then just let... But there again, that shows more character from Novak, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and remarkably, that's the third time he's beaten Roger in a Grand Slam when he's faced two match points.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. I mean, but yeah, as you say, this one, Roger just looked like he was going to keep serving these aces, just looked in complete control. The first one, he missed a forehand. And then the second one, Novak just came up with an absolutely ridiculous passing shot, which you may or may not remember the year before in that semi-final with Rafa. He did the same shot when kind of de facto match point down. So he's just someone who can come up with something absolutely magical in the moments where you should be kind of a complete nervous wreck. So that's just great credit to him again.
George, was you there on Saturday to see Halep win?
I was, yeah. And,
oh, really?
You know, she was insane, I thought.
Absolutely incredible, wasn't it?
I think if we're looking at the best performance of the weekend, it was her. She was unbelievable.
She was incredible. I mean, when she stands next to Serena at the end, about that whole, she's so tiny.
Yeah.
Serena's so huge compared to her.
Was it the fact that she's sort of up the power of her shots? You know, let's face it. Most people are going to play against Serena, they're going to try and defend. But was is she trying to match her for power?
Yeah, I think what Halep does best is kind of just use the power back against her. So she doesn't necessarily tee off quite like Serena does. But when Serena thumps it at her, she is willing to not just block it back, but actually just hit through it, send it back. And, you know, I think
it was incredible.
The big difference was movement, wasn't it? I mean, Halep can just cover the court so much better than Serena.
Incredible.
37 just looked a little sluggish.
Love sport.
Listen, John, I'm going to do my best impersonation now of Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Going past the finishing line and winning the sixth time at Silverstone. Are you ready?
I'm very excited.
There you go.
Oh, that's good.
It's incredible, isn't it? Shall I do the other two? Yeah, I think it was Leclerc and Bottas.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I should win an Oscar for that. We're joined now by Joe Down, sports journalist for the Daily Mail. How was that? Was that anything like what happened yesterday, Joe?
Pretty good, guys. Yeah, that sounded a little bit more like the Formula E cars in New York. That one, a little bit too high pitched.
Oh,
my voice hasn't dropped yet, so I'll have to tone it down. Listen, Joe. Obviously, it was the biggest sporting day that we can remember on a Sunday. And, you know, we did speak about this last week, that maybe they could have changed the Silverstone meet because we had the Cricket World Cup final, we got the men's singles final at Wimbledon.
Did that take it away? You know, like the tennis and the cricket?
Well, it finished earlier, but it did. You know, it's still sort of... I don't know, we were all built up for the cricket and tennis. And we should be celebrating the fact that our very own driver has recorded this championship.
British.
Yeah.
It wasn't ideal, guys. I mean, Lewis was asked about that on Thursday in the press conference when, about the scheduling. And he said, you know, he was very honest. He said, you know, it isn't ideal. You know, F1... You know, despite the monster that it is now, you know, it runs from March to December. It's seemingly on constantly. You know, to have that sort of showpiece race in this country on the same day as all these other, you know, huge sporting events is really not ideal. And you know, it was sort of fighting for, you know, space and coverage with these other things. So yeah, you know, in sort of typical F1 fashion, it shot itself in the foot a little bit in terms of the scheduling. However, you know, it was a fantastic race. You know, had it been like the race in France a couple of weeks ago, you know, it would have been absolutely disastrous. But Silverstone, you know, came up trumps yet again, a fantastic race, and I think F1 just about managed to hold its own on what you, as you say, guys, was a you know, phenomenal day of sport in this country.
Just tell us about this safety car moment. I mean, the fact that the safety car comes out, would Lewis have still won the race?
Yeah, he would have done, guys. He's asked about that after the race. We went to see him last night once the sort of dust had settled, and he was asked about this strategy. You know, there's no doubt about it. It was timely, but he was kind of due a stop anyway. And he told us that you know, he'd already decided on the morning of the race to do a different strategy to Valtteri Bottas, his teammate. So Bottas was always going to have to stop for a second time. Lewis said to us that he wasn't. He was only ever planning to stop once. So whilst the safety car meant that Bottas couldn't overtake Lewis and regain the lead, Lewis said, you know, he would have done that anyway because Bottas, as happened, would have had to come back into the pit. So it was, you know, it was a little bit of luck with the timing of it, but yeah, pretty sure that Lewis still would have won the race yesterday.
How do the team deal with things like that, situations like this, where obviously he's racing against his teammate, but whose allegiance is the team with? Now, what I'm saying is, if he's got a strategy, Bottas has got a strategy, obviously the team have got to know both, haven't they?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, they'll each have their you know, individual mechanics and engineers on either side of the garage. They'll meet, everyone will meet in the morning all together. They'll have an open meeting and discuss those different strategy, you know, tyre and pit stop options. And then, you know, the individual sides will go away and decide, you know, what is best for their driver. The drivers will have a lot of input into that. And as I say, as was the case yesterday, you know, Valtteri wanted to stop twice. Lewis wanted to stop once. And, yeah, you know, chuck the safety car in there as well. And it just works out for Lewis.
Just tell us the difference. Why is it that Bottas wanted to stop twice? And did he have a different tyre compound, or what was the difference?
That's exactly right, yeah. So obviously, you know, that just meant that he could spend slightly longer on, you know, a quicker tyre. So, you know, obviously he's having to stop twice, which is costing him an extra 20 seconds or thereabouts. But, you know, that tyre that he's on is supposedly between 3/4 of a second and maybe a second a lap faster. So, you know, if he's spending an extra 20 laps on that tyre, then, you know, there isn't much in it. So it's just what the driver feels. Obviously, they had the practice sessions on Friday and Saturday and qualifying. So, you know, they get to spend a lot of time on the tyres. They'll go away and look at all the, you know, the nerdy data and all that sort of thing, and they'll sort of pore over it, and they just make a decision based on their feeling, and that will, you know, vary from driver to driver, you know, how they feel on each tyre and each strategy.
On that nerdy bit there, I've been wanting to ask this for weeks actually, and I keep forgetting to ask about it. Am I right in saying that Pirelli provide all the tyres now?
That's right.
So, I mean, in the old days, we'd have the Goodrich or the Goodyear and, you know, a couple of the other brands. And I
Michelin,
think you could, you and Michelin, obviously, and you could choose between what brand you wanted to use. I suppose they were sponsored various teams. Why is it that only Pirelli supply all the teams?
Money.
Is it?
In a word, yeah, of course, yeah. They've got this contract with F1, and you know, Pirelli are a beast in the paddock, you know, big motorhomes, and I think, to be honest, guys, you know, for lots of fans, as you've said there, it's, you know, it's a little bit frustrating because you know, it isn't the easiest to understand, and you know, we seem from every race to have this pretty dull, you know, tyre talk, you know, that they are so sensitive, these different tyres, that, you know, it means that quite often, you know, the drivers can't go flat out, they're having to hold back and, you know, look after tyres, so, you know, maybe they don't want to stop more than they have to. It just seems to dominate. And actually, you know, what as has been the discussion a lot in the last few weeks, you know, Lewis has said it himself, he just wants to go flat out. You know, he doesn't want to be, you know, looking after, you know, rubber and fuel and all that sort of thing. You know, just let the guys go. So,
if he goes flat out every time, then it's like it's going to be boring, isn't it? There's got to be some sort of strategy.
That's true. You know, it does mix it up a little bit, but you know, you want to see, ultimately, you know, I think you want to see guys, you know, pushing to the limit, because, you know, if they're doing that, then over the course of a 90-minute, two-hour race, you're more likely to get get mistakes. You know, yeah. the guys are working exactly. physically harder. Mentally, it's more of a toll. So, you know, that comes into it as well.
Do you know what, Joe? I was saying last night, obviously, we were talking about the cricket, but I had mates who were bigger tennis fans, and we was all on our WhatsApp chat, as everyone's got. And everyone was sort of, you know, we've got one mate who likes Tour de France, and nobody really talks to him, if I'm honest. but, you know, we're sort of all having our sort of chats about it. And I sort of went on about the Grand Prix, and I put a bit of a technical question on there. I said, what do you all think about, you know, about the DRS situation? Do you think we could reduce it? And everyone went, shut up, you idiot. You know, because I don't want to talk about it. But I did say, I said, you know, it sort of, we enjoyed it when there was a few scrapes and a few bumps and a few engines blowing up and the oil spilling all over the floor. Now, I know that there was a bit of a collision yesterday with Vettel, wasn't there? And it made it a bit more exciting. Yeah. You know, it was a bit, you know, here we go. It's a bit of racing going on.
Fantastic. I think as well, guys, you know, the big thing from yesterday was, you know, the vast majority of circuits that F1 visits now are these kind of identikit circuits, you know, with not too much character. They're yes. a little bit soulless, you know, and actually they don't kind of promote good racing. Silverstone, you know, it just never fails to deliver. It's fast, it's furious, and, you know, we didn't need those kind of, you know, as your mate said on your WhatsApp, that sort of manufactured DRS-assisted overtaking.
Well, you've got the runoff areas as well,
racing.
Haven't you?
Absolutely, a real throwback.
And also, the crowd are part of it. Like, I mean, when I was looking at that yesterday, it does look like a different race to a lot of the meetings that they're going to. It just looks like a different setup. It looks real.
It's phenomenal. And as I say, it is a throwback. You know, you drive in each morning and, you know, the campsites are absolutely packed. You get these, driving in yesterday, you know, pretty early, about 8 o'clock, you know, through the circuit. And, you know, there's people there, you know, all the fans are there already in position. And, you know, it's freezing cold because it's an old airfield, you know, it's pretty windy there and it was overcast. And, you know, you've got guys sort of pitching up in, you know, tents and these pop-up chairs and, you know, blankets, and you just think, you know, you're absolutely raving mad. But it's fantastic, you know, cause we don't get this anywhere else. So, yeah, 141,000 there yesterday, phenomenal atmosphere, and the result that the vast majority of them wanted. So, yeah, great day at Silverstone.
Wow, 141,000. Just before you do go, how much is a ticket to get in?
I think your cheapest pass for the weekend, if you wanted to go for all 3 days, would be about £250. If you just wanted to go to the race on the Sunday, then probably you'd get in for sort of 50 or 60 if you're in the cheap seats.
Wow.
So yeah, it doesn't. It's still, you know, I guess relatively speaking, pretty expensive still, I suppose.
No, but I don't think that's too bad, really. I'm expecting more than that. And just on the, obviously people camp out and stuff. Is there loads of stuff going on in the fields? Obviously, it's not Glastonbury, but it's. Is it worth?
Well,
is it? You know, is it worth the weekend?
It's not far off that guy. You know, Lewis again said on Thursday, it is that kind of festival atmosphere. You know, lots of things going on. They have, you know, there's bands and musicians, you know, playing in the fan zone each night. You know, big barbecues and parties, and you know, it's a real sort of, you know, family feel, festival feel, and yeah, all very jovial and fun. It was great sort of party atmosphere again this year.
I bet it was Eddie Jordan's band popped up again, did they?
Always.
I know that there was...
Can't get him off the stage.
There was a do at the Hurlingham Club, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, and I had a few friends go to that, and it was Eddie Jordan's band again, here we go. he was wearing some rascal clothes yesterday in summer.
Oh, yes.
Did you see it? He had a white jacket on, his hair was all up like Rod Stewart, and he just wants to be a rock star, doesn't he?
That's it.
Fantastic.
Still got it.
Yeah, wonderful. Listen, Joe, thanks ever so much. It must be hard trying to commentate and sort of get the enthusiasm going for that after what's happened with the cricket and the tennis. But it's certainly a day to reflect on this morning, waking up Monday morning. Joe Downs there, sports journalist for the Daily Mail. Listen, I know that you're not mad on the Grand Prix, but the fact is, even you were saying it was wonderful that it's at Silverstone.
I used to watch it when I was a kid. That James Hunt,
because
Nicky Lauda,
because it got a little
bit. Nelson Piquet.
You want? Listen, we don't want anyone to get hurt, but we want a few scrapes and bumps.
Yeah,
and a few, situations, don't we?
Well, you want crashes.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, listen, whoever wanted Evel Knievel to clear all 13 buses?
Love sports.
Listen, we are now joined by George Caceres, sports psychologist, because we really want to talk about Djokovic because he had the whole crowd against him and it shows some character. Good afternoon, George.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Still recovering from yesterday's sport. What a marvellous day.
Fantastic day,
wasn't it? Now, how is Federer going to be feeling today, first of all?
Now, that's a very good question. I mean, he bounces back very well. So, you know, he's pretty philosophical. He's got a load of dosh in the bank. He's got 20-odd Grand Slams. He's, you know, he's a champion. The world loves him. And he had a most amazing match. And he, like he said at the interview, at the end, he played a very good game. And he stuck in there at his age to do that and come in at 12 games all and to lose, you know, so narrowly.
Yeah.
He can be proud of himself. But having said that, he will be kicking himself. He'll be in a lot of... I think he's going to be in a... He'd be very, very disappointed.
Yeah, well, with those two championship points that... you know, and it was just... I mean, he aced... He did two aces, and you think, God, mate, it was like it was 30 love, wasn't it?
40...
No, it was 30 love.
It was 40-15 up. 40-15. And he was serving... Up. He was serving, you know, and he hadn't... he'd only lost one service game that in the match, and he played the worst four points. I was watching it. His second serve speed dropped to about 91, 92 miles an hour. They were short. His first serve was pretty impotent to Djokovic's forehand. He stopped attacking. He literally just...
Do you think it was nerves? Or?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it got to him. I mean, how else can you explain the fact that he lost 4 points on his serve? And I don't think he's done that in the entire championship. And he did that when he was serving for the championship. So it got to him. At that moment, it got to him.
Mind you, Djokovic was doing a lot of double faults as well.
Yeah, he was. He was. But the thing with Djokovic is, I think when he push comes to shove, I think he's mentally, personally, I think he's mentally tougher.
Right. Than
this is
Federer,
what I was going to ask, actually, George, because, you know, when you've got the whole crowd against you, everybody loves Roger. As we've said on this show many times, he's a beautiful man. And everybody loves him.
Yeah.
And you must, you know, there's a lot of people that the old bottom lip would tremble and go, right, well, I'm going home if you don't like it.
But he might get the bit between his teeth, though. But he'd go, right, I'll show you.
Well, this is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Does he use that psychological, does he use that to sort of, you know, go against the crowd?
He has to, otherwise he would you know, he would be suffering, right? But he doesn't get to him. I mean, his pride is hurt and he feels a little bit hard done by after the matches. But certainly in the matches, he's trained his mind to focus even more and to rechannel his own focus. And I think sometimes when, you know, a bit like maybe Warner, you know, the cricketer, when he's played since he's come back, you know, he gets booed. It doesn't seem to have affected him at all, really.
How do you advise people with that then, George?
Well, I would advise someone to become a psychopath, basically.
Really?
In terms of, you know, I mean, that's sort of a bit severe, right? But, I mean, some of these people, I don't think they have the same sort of sensitivities or feelings that others do. And I generally think that there's a case for some people who are just tougher nuts. They don't have the same fear or anxiety levels that others do. There's a famous climber, a free solo climber, who climbed El Capitan in America, and
I saw that documentary. Yeah,
death-defying, right? Death-defying. And do you remember when they showed the scan of his brain? He doesn't have the same levels of serotonin, and his MRI scan. You know, the scan showed that he didn't have the same fear impulse that other people had. The same reaction to fear, and that's genetic, right? So I think there's something about people in some situations, and I don't know whether Djokovic is one of those. I suspect he is genetically. You know, when it comes to severe pressure moments, he doesn't feel the same anxiety that other people do.
I liken this, George, to situations where I've got a couple of mates who can do 2 foot putts, and they relish it. When I walk up to a 2 foot putt, I'm doing somersaults in my mind.
Yeah.
It's killing me. I've already told myself I'm going to miss it. It drives me mad. And I still, I mean, what's the advice for someone like that? Because you know, on that smaller scale, it still relates to what Djokovic has got to do to close a game out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that everybody's asked. You know, that's what sports psychology was invented for, I suppose, is to help those situations where, you know, you're about to take a penalty, you're about to serve for the match, you're about to hit a 2-foot putt for the Open, or, you know, to win a round of beers with your mates, yeah. And you start getting the nerves. How do you cope with that? And there's several different ways that people accumulate their skills to do that. One is you have a plan, and you focus on your process and your plan, which is, you know, in your case, it's, you know, making sure you stick to the same pre-shot routine, and that you visualize the ball going in. Mm-hmm. You do exactly what you do normally. This nerves will still be running despite of that. So you still have to find ways to practice that in pressure situations and keep doing it until you find a way to cope with the mind.
How do you do it? Because I've read that book as well, and I went to see somebody about it as well, because it kept shutting my brain out, if you like.
Yeah.
And I remember him sort of saying, feel the sun on your face and blah, 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 to feel good. And I've read that book where you imagine the ball dropping in the hole, but you also imagine it's as easy as picking the ball out of the hole. Is it a case of practicing this? Because I still can't seem to let it get into the little zone that's telling me I'm going to miss it.
It is practice. I mean, that's why I think when England did well in the championships, recent championships, you know, they were practicing their penalties. And you do have to practice, for sure, practice under pressure and keep practicing. But the other thing, which is quite sort of paradoxical, is we can try too hard, right? We can try too hard, and less is more. And if we trust and focus our attention on not trying too hard and relaxing and trying and just letting the skill set take place, then we're fine. So if I was to ask you, for example, to walk along a curb on a pavement, you'd do it without thinking, right? And you wouldn't fall over unless you've had a few beers, which maybe you would, actually. But anyway.
Yeah, I probably would, yeah.
Well, I don't need beers to fall over.
All right. So, but if I was to put the same pavement and curb 30 feet in the air and say, right, now do it, you'd struggle, right? It's the same pavement, same curb, but the mind plays tricks on you. So if we trust ourselves and that's where we, you know, so Djokovic, go back to Djokovic, you know, he's done a lot of work on himself in terms of his meditation. He's done a lot of mindfulness training and focusing so he gets his emotions in check, and he focuses on what's actually happening rather than what he's thinking about what's happening. And so these are techniques and practices and drills that are available to all of us.
And is the meditation thing quite important?
It is. And if you look at it, it certainly is, because with meditation, you're learning to quieten down your heart rate. You learn, and so let's look at heart rate, right? So if I was to look at people who do deep water, you hold their breath underwater, right? So the ones that do the best and can hold their breath the longest are the ones who have the slowest heart rate. As soon as they start panicking or worrying about stuff, the heart rate goes up, the breath goes. So heart rate is linked to all sorts of physiological reactions, and meditation, you help to sort of slow your heart rate down. You help to get your emotions into a calmer place, and you're focusing on what is actually happening. Like, you can feel your leg, you can feel physical sensations, and you come out of your brain, you come out of your mind, which is all the thoughts, you know, where the dangers are. And the brain is where the mind starts playing tricks on us. Like, what if I miss this, and I've got a 2-foot putt, and I know I've got to do it, and I shouldn't miss, and it's easy, and I've done it before. And your brain starts playing tricks. So you want to try and quieten your brain down so that you go into a zone, and meditation helps you do that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, just as you're saying that, obviously they wouldn't have had time to do this yesterday, but let's just very quickly talk about Ben Stokes and Joffre Archer, the two that are really in the firing line there. How would they have... oh, there's a strange sound that come in there.
My computer telling me... I got to do my meditation, actually.
I was going to say.
I was going to say, come in.
I thought it was a sign from God. How would they have calmed their nerves? What approach would Ben Stokes and Joffre Archer on the other side of it done with the bowling?
Well, Joffre Archer, first of all, because it was more nerve-wracking, I think, for him, for sure, because he'd been cold for a while, hadn't bowled for a long period, and it was all on him, right? It was his six balls, and he's new to the team, and he would he displace somebody else, and so there was a lot riding on him. And
yeah.
So, and it was really interesting, wasn't it? His first ball, I don't know whether it was actually a wide or it wasn't, but it was too close for comfort, and he was given a wide, and that was not a good start for him.
No.
So, I mean, what he would have been focusing on would have been exactly what I've just been saying, which is, what's my plan, right? That comes down, what's my plan? Where am I going to bowl to? And probably focusing, or almost certainly focusing on what he wanted to do, not what he did not want to do. So rather than saying stuff to himself like, I don't want to bowl a wide, or I don't want to miss this, or I don't want them to hit me for six, or I don't want them to go down the leg side so they can really score off me. He needs to be thinking that he was thinking probably about where he wanted to hit bowl the ball, how he was going to approach his run up, make sure he remembered his looseness in his body and all the things that enabled him to bowl smoothly,
yeah.
and focus on his plan and his process, they call it, process awareness.
Right.
And then he would have had a lot of support around him, and Ben Stokes came over and had a word with him, which is interesting because...
I saw that, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been there before. Stokes was hit for multiple sixes, wasn't he, in the 2020 final?
Yeah.
Against the West Indies, so he knows how it feels. So, and he would have felt the love of the team. The love of the team would have given him the support and the backing, and that would have certainly have helped him. And the rest of it is down to him and his ability to focus under pressure.
Yeah, okay. Great insight. I could talk about the psychology part of this for a long time because it plays tricks on my mind myself. George, thanks ever so much for your time. I know you're busy today, so thanks for giving us an insight into that.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Ben and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.